Go from 21 up to 23.
Vega vinashi nityam yah.
Enam
ajam avyayam.
Katam sapurusha partha.
Katam sapurusha partha.
Kam ghatayati hantikam.
Kam ghatayati hantikam.
Vasamsi jirnani yata vihaya.
Vasamsi jirnani yata vihaya.
Na vai grhnati na ruparani.
Na vai grhnati na ruparani.
Tatha sharirani vihaya jirnanya.
Tatha sharirani vihaya jirnanya.
Anyani samyati navani dehi.
Anyani samyati navani dehi.
Nainam chindanti shastrani.
Nainam chindanti shastrani.
Nainam dahati pavakaha.
Nainam dahati pavakaha.
Na chainam kledayantyapaha.
Na chainam kledayantyapaha.
Na shoshyati marutaha.
Na shoshyati marutaha.
Na shoshyati marutaha. Na shoshyati marutaha.
Na shoshyati marutaha.
Cindy. Na. No. No repeating. Okay. Na. Na enam chindanti shastrani. Na enam dahati pavakaha. Na cha enam kledayanti apaha. Na shoshyati marutaha. This whole section, Bhagavan is still working on just revealing and differentiating yourself, the Atma, from all of your experiences, from Maya, from the entire objectified world. That differentiation has to take place, right, for you to even know that you have a self that's not the body, mind, sense organs. That differentiation has to be seen. And so in so many ways he's unfolding this over and over and over again. And so in Shankara's commentary, there's a doubt, like, isn't this a bit repetitive? Isn't Krishna's not supposed to say the same thing over and over again, you know? He says, no, it's not like that. Because this actually, the viveka, the discrimination required, is not an ordinary thing. It's not an ordinary thing to be really able to recognize the non-objectifiable, stable presence of your own being, you know. And so we have to come at that from many different ways, many different angles. And so that's, we shouldn't look at it as repetitive. Oh, the teacher says the same thing over and over and over. I'm so sick of it. You shouldn't look at it like that. You should be seen over and over and over again from even there's subtle changes, subtle ways of saying the same thing a little bit differently, but those little subtle variants can make a big difference, because the first time you didn't see it when it was said this way, but when it said the same thing actually said in this way, all of a sudden the mind gets it. So that has to do with the teaching methodology, and Krishna himself is using that, the teaching methodology, for Arjuna, you know, saying the same thing. Swamiji once said that teaching Vedanta is kind of like an elephant trying to dance on a little stump. Little tree stump, and the elephant's foot, one foot of the elephant covers the whole stump, you know. And so how to be creative. So here, just for translation, enum is in the accusative case. Enum means this atma, this self. Why they say this? When you say this in English, this as opposed to that. That, the pronoun that, there's some distance. This is closer, right? There's this and there's that. That is farther removed. This is immediate. The atma, yourself, is immediate as your very being, and it also exists. People even wonder, well, you say that there's a self, but I can't see it. I can't see it. You say it can't be objectified. It can't be experienced as an object. It can't be known in the way we know everything else. So how do I know that that it's even there? You know, so there's that question comes up. It comes up in this Purva Paksha Siddhanta means, and where you're raising objections. And you'll see in Shankara's commentary, and when you're reading Swamiji's Gita Home Study, there'll be, Shankara will bring up objections and then answer those objections, or doubts and then answer those doubts. That has to take place, right? Because your mind is the one that really has to not only see this knowledge, but also understand how actually it can't be another way. If there can be another way, so it could be like this, it could be like that. There's no knowledge there. There's just, this is somebody's idea, and this is somebody else's idea, and who knows what the heck's going on, really. You know, but that's that's not clarity. Clarity is when you really understand, you really see something, and if an objection comes up for you, an objection rises, the resolution of that objection arises at the same time. You know, because of clarity. So here, when we say enum this atma, this. My own being, my own presence, which exists. I am. I exist. I'm not a figment of my own imagination. You know, I am, and I am present. My being is present to every experience that I have. So I don't feel like I'm non-existent and everything else exists. You know, I am the existence, in fact, as we'll see, which everything else enjoys. But to think that because I'm not an object within the creation, an object of an object of awareness, something that can be known in the sense that I'm used to knowing something, then you can think, well, because I can't be known, I can't be experienced, you know, then I may be there, but I have no experience of myself and I'm not aware of it because I'm not an object. So these kind of doubts and confusions come up. So just for starters, he said, this self that is here, that is present, it's not something which is away from you, it is your very being, your very presence. So, enum atmanam, this self. Then so he says, na enum chindanti shastrani, weapons cannot cut. Any weapons cannot cut this self. In fact, Swamiji brings out in his commentary, this is just some little extra details, the word they use for weapons is shastra, shastra. The shastras are weapons that you hold in your hand, like swords and knives and the sticks, and gata means clubs, that type of thing. Any weapon that's held in your in your hand, whereas astras are weapons that are thrown, like arrows, for instance, bow and arrows, and anything, or missiles. This, because in India they have lots of, I mean, in the Puranas, like the, and the Itihasas, like the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, there's all kinds of weapons, there's all kinds of missiles, they're magical missiles, missiles that can be directed by mantras and sent anywhere. Those are astras. You know, even arrows have mantras associated with them, and you can send an arrow to go for miles and land in a particular spot and do a particular thing. So that's all mantra astras. You know, so we have shastras and astras. You say just one of them, like Shastra, it's going to include the other. So if you divide them, then you're kind of talking about the different types of weapons that we have available. If you just say one, like Shastras, it will include Astras. See what I mean? So here, the Shastrani, all no weapon, the weapons themselves, cannot cut me. They can't touch me. The chidda, they can't cut me, they can't divide me, they can't hurt me. Na enam dahati pavakaha. Also, pavakaha is agni, the fire. Fire cannot, dahati means burn. The fire cannot burn me. So, na is not. Na enam, this atma, this self, the fire cannot burn. Na cha enam kledayati kledayanti apaha. The waters, they always put water in plural, apaha, because drops of water together. So the apaha, the waters, they cannot wet me. Na shoshiyati marutaha, the wind cannot dry me, right? Cannot destroy me through drying me. So anything like this body is held together, sneha, my whatever liquid, by moisture that holds me together. Holds all of these parts together. If they're dried up, they just disintegrate into dust. Right? Your body would disintegrate into dust without that viscous liquid. Okay, so the marut, the air, can destroy you through dehydration, through drying you up. So none of these things can touch the atma. So one of the things that he's doing, that Krishna's doing here, is really talking about the five elements: space, air, fire, water, earth. The Shastras are the earth because they're modifications of earth, the metals, right? And then he talks about the of all of the elements. He's talking about the earth and the metals, about the fire, about the water, and about the air. He's not talking about the space, right? He's talking about the five elements, because we have five elements: space, air, fire, water, earth. That really, these five elements make up the Maya. So we actually say that the Maya, which is itself in unmanifest condition, because we look at the universe as cyclical, the Maya comes into manifestation. And when it comes into manifestation, I'm not going to go through the whole Panchakarana right now, but just to kind of do it a little briefly. When the Maya comes into manifestation as this universe, it comes into manifestation in the form subtle and physical, the form of the five elements. So just in this physical universe, and what we mean by that is this universe that we experience through our five sense organs. So it's actually the waking state. This physical universe I have access to through my sense organs. Right. Otherwise, if you were to remove your sense organs one by one, you've actually no longer become a counter of experience for experiencing this physical universe. So this physical universe is really comprised of the five elements, right, which are space, air, fire, water, earth, and then what we call the elementals. And the intimate elementals are the combinations of these five elements that even make up this physical body, that make up, you know, vegetation, that make up all experience. All of them, even wood, all of the tools that we use, all of the building materials that we use, everything, they're really elementals that are based in these five physical elements, the stula. The stula bhutas. Bhuta means element. So the stula bhutas are the physical elements. So that's what we're experiencing here. And of these five physical elements that we experience, these gross elements that make up the world, out of all of them, there's only one of them that is indestructible when it's present, and that is space. Right? Just think about it. Space, of all of the five elements, is the one that is most pervasive. It pervades everything. So you can't, as we'll see later, you can't cut space, you can't cut space, you can't wet space, you can't dry it up. None of the elements can do anything to space other than be in it. Right? Space pervades everything, and it also remains something which is asanga. Asanga means nothing, everything moves through it, but it's never attached to anything. Swamiji used to use them, and I'll be using it too in different ways, but you think of having like a little clay pot, and that little clay pot has pot space in it, right? In the pot is space. That's true. In the pot is space. But when you move space from, when you move the pot from point A to point B and back again, are you taking the space with you? You know, pot space. So, no, you're not. Nothing is happening, right? Nothing is happening to the space. And so also say, he'll say, you know, like the space is on this nice, this little pot is on this nice shelf, and, you know, somebody comes and just bumps it, and the pot crashes to the ground and goes and breaks into smithereens. Okay. Has the pot space just died? In the death of the pot, you know, in the crashing of the pot, what has happened to the space? You know? Nothing. In fact, and the space also doesn't feel, oh, I was contained in this little pot, and now finally I've been released back into myself. There's no such thing. The standpoint of the space, it's just space. Nothing has happened. When you're moving through space, nothing is happening because space is more subtle, right? So even within this creation, Bhagawan, I mean, these are all the great gifts. We have all of these illustrations, what we call drishtantas, to make a point to understanding your own nature, because space itself is one of the elements which is objectified by you, right? This space is not something that you can't negate. Just close your eyes. Close your eyes. The experience of space is gone, along with the other four elements. So space is something that exists, that I objectify, that I'm aware of. The Atma, when you close your eyes, doesn't go away. What goes away is your perception of the five elements. It's the same, say, the five elements are viewed as what is responsible also for the subtle creation, the subtle components of you, like your mind and your sense organs and your prana. Those are all the sattva, rajas, and tamas aspects of these five elements that relate to the physical one. So these five elements and their elementals on a subtle level and on a physical level, all of them are objectified by you, right? But within themselves, there's one of them that is not touched. It's objectifiable and it's differentiated. The space is differentiated from the other four elements, you know, because it's one of the elements. Like, let me explain this. Like, say you have an imagination. I ask you to have an imagination of a beautiful scene. Space is part of that imagination, right? All five elements and elementals are part of the imagination. It's not like your imagination is taking place in space. Space is part and parcel of the imagination. So when you have an imagination, you're projecting the five elements, including space, and you're withdrawing the five elements, including space. When you go to deep sleep, you're withdrawing the mind and your perception of all of the elements, including space. Like, when you go to deep sleep, you're not just one big space left. So space is an element. It's objectified by you. You're aware of space as you're aware of all of the other five elements. But because space is, of all of the elements, the most subtle, we have just innately an understanding of what it means to be free, to be unattached to something, to be uncontained. It's not the self. It's not the same as the self. But space can't be cut. It can't be wet. It can't be dried out. There's nothing really. You can't burn it. All of these things take place in space without harming space at all. And I am aware of space. Okay? Along with all of the other elements, I am aware of space, and I am free of space. Right? I don't require space. I can be without space. I can be with physical space or with imaginal space or without space altogether. I can just be with my being, which where there is no space. Right? I can be in deep sleep where there is no space. So space is something, the most subtle of all of the elements, which itself can't be touched by any of the other elements, and I am of a different order even of reality from space itself. So what's being said is really kind of a beautiful understanding, is that even in this universe, which enjoys the same order of reality, one thing with another, right? So even space, air, fire, water, earth, and all of the elementals are of the same order of reality. And so they can affect each other, except for space, right? Because space is the most subtle, and so nothing can touch the space. But within this order of reality, the elements can react against and for one another. They affect each other. They can hurt each other. They can dismember each other. They can put each other together, right? Because same order of reality. But this order of reality, for instance, if I have a dream where you again have the five elements, but now on a subtle level, the dream is a different order of reality, isn't it? It's a different order of reality. And so the weapons and utensils and all of the things available at this order of reality are not available in the dream order of reality. That's the difference. When you have different orders of reality, they can affect each other within themselves, but they can't go to another order of reality and affect that. So I'm doing it often kind of joke, you know, like I had a really big meal before I went to bed, but in the dream I was so hungry, you know. And the opposite also, I had such a huge, I had the most interesting dream. We had a huge feast, you know, a huge celebration and feast, and we were all eating, we're all so full. And I woke up, you know, how on earth could I be hungry? Because totally different order of reality. The two do not affect each other. And so this idea of order of reality is kind of important to understand. And it's a Swamiji would always also just use the example of me and my shadow, you know. I'm walking along. I'm just walking along with my shadow, okay. But what can my shadow do? It can give some shade, you know. But what can I do? What if I say, you know, why don't you go do that? Why don't you take care of this problem? I'll take care of that one. It cannot do it because it's a different order of reality. You know? And so here, I think one of the very most important things in these two verses, they're very related to each other, is that actually we're looking at different orders of reality. You know? So now say, for example, in the waking state, which is what this dream is referring to mostly, even within the same order of reality, what is more gross cannot do anything to what is more subtle. And so space, even though it's in the same order of reality, it is more subtle and so is free of that which is more gross because it's pervasive to it. It pervades it. And so if fire can't burn space and weapons can't cut through it and water can't wet it, you know, then the space is free from all of those things. But I am more subtle, and that's in the same order of reality, but I am more subtle even than space. And I'm also not in the same order of reality. That is something that is important to understand. I'm not in the same order of reality. I am more subtle because I pervade space. It's not like you're aware of space and space is over here and you're here. The space exists in me. I am conscious of space. It's not like consciousness is here and then there's some something inert, a blackout, and then over here there's another consciousness illumining space. No. All of your experience exists in consciousness. There is no distance between consciousness and what you're aware of. But the thing is, the conscious being, which pervades and is kind of pervades whatever vritti or whatever experience is there, it pervades it, but it is free of it. It's asanga completely. That is why, no matter what the experience, what the dream, what the nightmare, what is going on in that experience, doesn't touch me. It's not away from me, but it doesn't touch me. We can kind of use space. No drishtanta, no illustration is perfect. But we can still use them. Because it's just like space itself fully pervades all of the other elements. Pervading the elements, though, it can't be touched because more subtle. I am both more subtle because I pervade space itself. Space exists in me. It is known to me. So I, in that sense, I am more subtle. So even space cannot touch me, following that law of that which is more gross cannot harm that which is more subtle. So following that law, space doesn't touch me. Space cannot touch me, and I never even think about being touched by space. It's like, no. But, when I think about being touched by anything, I think about my body being touched, my body being burnt, my body being cut, my body being dehydrated, my body dying from dehydration, drowning, All of these type of things, all of these elements are affecting me, the one who is in the same order of reality, right? Even when we think about this body in reference to the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, again, the subtle body is made of the subtle five subtle elements. The physical body does not touch or harm the subtle body. So think of it like, this is also something very, helpful to understand, I think. This subtle body, which indwells the physical body, say the physical body has problems, like maybe, for instance, your sense organs are not functioning well, or your body has been hurt in one way or another, and so it can't function. Part of your body is not functional, or one of your sense organs is not functional. That just means that while the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, is utilizing this physical body, right, as an instrument, its arms don't work, if I can put it like that. The subtle eyes don't work. Say if you can't speak, then your voice does not work because the physical instrument doesn't work. But as soon as you give up this body and take another body, as long as that body works, is functioning, then the subtle body can utilize it. So the subtle body is never being hurt one way or the other. It's just the physical body is either, very healthy, or it's hurt in this way or that way, or it's losing sense organs in this way or that way. And so the subtle body is not able to make use of it. That doesn't mean that the subtle body is harmed and the physical body is harmed. The subtle body just has to wait for you to get another body. That works, right? So just think, say you have some ailment, or you have some physical issue, or your sense, you have lacking some sense organs not functioning, and then you believe in transmigration and all of that, but oh my God, I'm going to be blind forever. No, it's just this time around. Relax. You have to put up with it for this life. That's all. No problem. Be patient. Okay, I'll be patient. Yeah. The subtle body is subtle. The physical body is gross. So the subtle body is not harmed by the physical body. It's just as long as it's indwelling the physical body, physically it can't utilize a part of the body that doesn't function anymore. It's the same with a brain. If you get Alzheimer's or there's some brain damage or something, that brain is not functioning. the subtle mind, the mind is there to use the instrument, but the instrument doesn't work. You know, and so it'll be working in subtle realms in whatever way it can. You still have your imagination and subtle capacities that don't require the physical brain, you know, because the physical brain is damaged. But it's only damaged this time around, not the subtle body. Now, we have to go more. So the subtle body, in fact, is taking body after body after body, and it's limited, yet it becomes limited by the upadhi, by the physical upadhi. So say, for instance, just to really understand, your subtle body has the same capacities. They don't go away. Your prana is the same. Your sense organs are the same. The manas is the same. The capacity, you know, the instrument, the subtle instrument. But say you're born into an animal body. Then any animal body has incredible capacities which you don't have. Human body doesn't have, and it has things that, and you have things that animal body doesn't have. So when you take an animal body, you will be, your sukshma sharira will be limited and exalted in the way that upadhi, that conditioning adjunct, is limited and exalted. You know, so that if you take a deva body, and on a different loka, then that sukshma sharira will then be exalted compared to the human sharira, the human body. It'll be exalted because that upadhi, that conditioning adjunct, is exalted. You know, exalted from our standpoint. But then when you come back into a human birth, then you will have the limitations of this loka, of this plane, and this, and the particular body you take. But the sukshma sharira itself is not harmed. See what I mean? That's something to kind of understand. Now, say if we go even more inward to the self-conscious being that is really the self, the being that the sukshma sharira enjoys for its consciousness, for its being. That, again, is more subtle. So even in terms of subtle and gross, nothing happens. The body doesn't affect, physical body doesn't affect the sukshma sharira, the subtle body. And the subtle body and the physical body don't in any way affect your being because more subtle than even space. But there's another thing to understand also here. Well, hello. Okay. There's another thing to understand here. No, you're interfering. The buzzing is going inside. Okay. So there's another thing to understand here, and that has to do with the order of reality. You understand the difference in the order of reality between you and your imagination. Right? That is clear, I think. It's a different order of reality. What goes on, like for instance, what goes on in your imagination is affecting what is in the same order of reality as the imagination, everything in it. The same order of reality. But it doesn't affect you at all. Not at all. For you, even the time, the space, everything that happens in that order of reality is not affecting you. And you're even a jnani. You have jnana nishtha. You have clarity. You have clear knowledge, hopefully. I would assume that we do have clear knowledge that what is going on in your imagination, you know, is a different order of reality than my own being. Because I can project the imagination, I can withdraw it. I have no fear of death in reference to the presence or absence of my imagination. I have no fear of death if in my wild imagination all kinds of things are happening, you know. I can feel fear in the imagination, but it's a mithya fear, you know. I feel the fear because the imagination is a scary one. Maybe I'm doing some, what we call, with Jung, when I go inside and I'm doing what we call active imagination and going deeply into the psyche and into different realms of the imaginal realms of the psyche, we can have some fear, just like a bad dream. But when you're doing active imagination, You are there. Your buddhi is there. You are conscious. You know at the same time that you're entering into that imaginal world, you know who you are, and you know you're entering into that imaginal world, and you're having all kinds of experiences there that can evoke emotion, but for you, the emotion that's being evoked and the situation itself is mitya, because you have self-knowledge in reference to the imagination. You have self-knowledge. You know it's a different order of reality that has its own importance within duality. I'm not negating the beauty of it or the importance of it or the meaningfulness of it within duality. But you yourself know that your being is not going to end up in there. Right? That you are free from it and you are engaged in it at the same time. You're both completely free and completely engaged. That's a beautiful thing. That's knowledge. That's knowledge in reference to these built-in drishtantas that Bhagavan has given us, because we can talk like this, see? How with your dream, how with your imagination, you know, how with your daydreams, the satyam mitya, how the daydream and everything that goes on in it is there, it is experienced by you, but at the same time you are completely free of it. Right? Even if in the daydream or in the imagination or in the dream you're totally identified with it, like in the deep sleep, there's really no buddhi that's awake saying, oh, this is just a dream, unless you know how to do lucid dreaming. You're just totally in it. But when you wake up, you know very clearly that was a dream. Yeah. In imagination, you're awake. When you have an imagination or do active imagination, you're awake. So while that active imagination is taking place and all things, kinds of things are going on, there can be wars going on, there can be monsters slaying you, there can be all kinds of two-headed beings coming down from outer space, just use your imagination. You can do anything you want, basically. But all of that slaying, all of that activity is taking place in an order of reality which is a different one than my own self and cannot cross those boundaries. One order of reality cannot cross into another order of reality. And that's what we mean now in terms of when we use these words, satyam and mitya. What is mitya? Is that which anything that exists within duality, anything that comes into being and goes out of being, anything that is subject to change, anything that exists within time and space on a subtle level or a physical level, we call that mitya. And we'll probably as the course progresses, we'll get more deeply into this in many different ways. But mitya means different order of reality, you know, which has no being, independent being on its own. And the proof for that in terms of this creation is that every single thing in the creation comes into being and goes out of being. It's changing. There's time. Anything that changes is a birth and death of that particular moment, of that particular instance. So every experience that you have comes into being, goes out of being. In slow time, in fast time, you know, in minuscule time, it's changing, coming into being, going out of being, coming into being, going out of being. That means it has no being of its own. It depends upon being. Because everything that you experience that comes is born and dies, it's bordered by non-existence. So it has to have a substance, something that gives it its being. Right? And that being is also, must be a different order of reality, because it itself can't exist in time. It can't exist in time, or it has the same problem. It comes into being and goes out of being, so it must be mitya. But mitya, because it is bordered by, comes into existence and goes out of existence, it can't have any being of its own, because nothing can come from non-existence, and so it wouldn't be here at all. Right? Non-existence means it's not there. So this universe would not be here at all if it comes from non-existence, because non-existence is not there for anything to come from it, And anything, if you were to just kind of twist your brain around, say, well, what would come from non-existence would only be non-existence. But you have to really screw your brain that way to do that, because that can't happen. Because non-existence isn't there. Non-existence means it's not there. So nothing can come from it. But what do we experience about this, the world? This world is, we experience it. We experience this world. We experience our mind. We experience our feelings. So when we experience them, they exist. They exist. But they have no existence. So where do they get their existence? Right? And you also know they don't exist, because as soon as the feeling passes or a thought passes, that it's not there. But existence is still there, you know. I am still there. Being is still there. It doesn't come and go. It can't come and go. If it comes and goes, it exists in time. And then it has no being of its own. So all of this world, it seems so real, so solid, so stable, because it's adhishtana. What it depends on for being is stable. It is completely stable, you know. Because it can't come into being and go out of being. It's free of time and space. There's no place for it to move. So there's nothing more stable. So now think of this. Everything that's unstable, includes, and subject to change, and therefore is mithya, dependent upon something else for its being, everything that's unstable, you know, is dependent upon that which is stable. So look at you. Everything about you is unstable. Means every single thing about you that you experience, that you can objectify and say, this is my body, these are my sense organs, they work in this way and that way, this is my mind, it's doing this, it's doing that. These are all, every part of you that you are aware of, that you experience, that you can objectify, is totally unstable. It comes into being and goes out of being. It has no being of its own. And yet, I am, I exist. Because as long as this body is here, as long as my mind is here, all of these things which are mithya, that have no being of their own, if they're here and can be experienced, I am their being. I am their being. I am the being. I am the conscious being, which is the self of this body, mind, sense organs, and this world, which has no being of its own. You know? So, you have to recognize in your own experience, I, the stable one, am not an object in time and space. Time and space exists in me. I'm aware of it. I objectify it. And I can be without it. Just go to deep sleep, or turn your attention toward yourself, or go into a different level, a different order of reality that's different from the waking state. Go into the dream state. Go into the imaginal world and have a whole different time and space, a whole different body. These are different orders of reality. The waking state and the dream state, different orders of reality, which is clear to us. But we don't know about this other order of reality, which is me. I am a different order of reality than the waking state and the dream state. The waking state and the dream state, one is subjective duality, right? And one is objective. Your dreams and your emotions and your experiences, your projections, those are subjective. But they still exist within time and space. Physical body is objective, means you didn't create it. It's part of Ishvara. It exists within time and space. Different order of reality. The waking state doesn't affect the dream. The dream doesn't affect the waking state. And neither of them affect me. Because I, too, am a different order of reality. I'm not an object that comes and goes in time and space. I am the sat-chit, the conscious being, the me, that is ever present to every experience that does come in time and space. But I remain a sangha, totally unattached. Totally untouched, totally unattached, more settled than space itself. And now just think, if you weren't unattached to, say, your mind, if you weren't, what if the mind, which is a thought flow, what if you weren't attached to a given vritti? You have a given thought, and I'm attached to it. Uh-oh. Now what's going to happen? What's that thought? First of all, what's it going to do to me while it's with me? And then what's going to do when it leaves? Because I'm attached to it. I have to drag me along with it. You know? And I can't make it stay either. You can hang on to a thought modification for a little bit of time. Not for very long. It's going to drag you right away. It's not our experience. We have no experience of self-loss. It's just that I am present to my good experiences and my bad experiences. I am present to my good thoughts and my bad thoughts. You know, to my sukha, to my pleasure, and to my pain. But just because I'm present to something, as the very consciousness, the very being in which that takes place, doesn't mean I become that. I can't become it because they all leave and I stay. Every experience, without exception, every experience that exists within time and space on a subtle level or physical level comes and goes. I don't. They're all my experiences. I remain here for all of them. You know? And it's the same me. It's not a different me. It's a different maturing mind who has worked out this problem and that problem. You know? It's a different maturing mind. But it's not a different me. So this self is indestructible. So it says, I cannot be, the weapons, they can't cut me, you know. The fire can't dry me. The waters can't wet me. Nothing can, the air can't dry me. All of these things, these five elements, they can, and their elementals, they can't touch me in any way. Because of two things, I am more subtle, but more importantly, really, I am a different order of reality. This everything that exists within time and space comes into being and goes out of being. I am the being. I am the being, the conscious being, the self-evident being that is me, that is the me experience, into which everything comes and everything goes. Nothing ever happening to me. And so that satya-mitya relationship is something to understand. The good way, easy way to understand it is just to understand my mind. The relationship of my mind to me. The relationship of my imagination to me. And this is not different than that. It's just a bigger, longer imagination. This body is not imagined by me, and yet the body, the mind, the sense organs, and this world are illumined by me. They are known by me. I am the conscious being because of which they enjoy when they are here. And when they go, I am still here. Just like when the dream comes, the whole dream enjoys me, means depends on me for its being. That's what I mean by enjoys. It depends upon me for its being, for its knownness. While it is here. But it has no independent being. It has no independent consciousness. I am the conscious being, which that dream is dependent upon for it to be and to be known. But when it goes away, that order of reality, kind of like your shadow, it goes away, and what happens to you? Nothing. What goes away when your daydream happens to you? The daydream goes away, what's happened to you? Nothing. You have knowledge in reference to your daydream. You need to have knowledge in reference to this creation, which requires that you do this type of differentiation to always recognize, wow, in fact, this me. You can just notice that every day, every moment of every day, as you have a thought flow, it's like, I am always here. I am not being negated. I am not being replaced. One thought replaces the next. One emotion replaces the next, replaces the next, replaces the next. One perception replaces the next, replaces the next. I am never replaced. Since I am never replaced, the mind can notice that. You can notice that fact. Even when I'm saying that, you're probably going, well, that's true. That's true in the sense of I'm always here. Whatever the experience is, I am here. But now we have to say, Who is it that's here? Who remains? And then the key is to go to that one that I call me. Notice that this me, the self that I am, it's not being replaced. It's not being negated. It's not being touched. You can even have the most horrendous emotional sorrow, you know. And that, is, of course, is experienced. But that comes and goes. You know, those intense emotions, they come and go in you. So now there's another thing that we'll be working on in meditation, I'm sure. An intense emotion comes, you're so sad, okay? But that emotion comes into conscious being as it arises, and that means you are there. The one who is there before and after is there during. And that means you can differentiate yourself from whatever the emotional state is. And your buddhi can learn to welcome that emotional state and just bring it into your own presence. Your presence, your being, is a different order of reality. It has no problem. It's not just like I can't, in the same order of reality, I can't pour some water on space, you know, and get it all wet. You know? You can't do anything. Your mind can't do anything to you. Nothing. Your emotions cannot touch you. They have you as their being, as their self. And your self is so healing, just your nature, just by your nature. It's so beautiful, it's so healing. These raucous emotions, you know. You can always, with the buddhi, you can always bring them home to the one who is so soothing. You know, welcoming all of these experiences just into yourself, which is so soothing and remains completely unchanged. So the satya-mitya relationship, we have to keep seeing in many different ways, and by looking at the elements and how they not only cannot touch space, the most subtle, they cannot touch me. That's true on both a physical and an emotional, a subtle level. Right? So we'll keep seeing it. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om.